Well, good morning, everyone. If you'd all like to come in and take your seats, we'll get started this morning. Looks like our video is not working. Well, welcome this morning, everyone. It's nice to see everybody here this morning. Been a lot of people on holidays and all sorts of things lately. And so nice to have a bit more of a crowd this morning. Now let me just get the share going here, eh? There we go. So as many of you who would who have been following the online series would know, we're looking at this winter, a series of Understanding the Bible, which is basically where we're sort of breaking the Bible up into all different sorts of, different sorts of categories, Old Testament, New Testament, different types of books, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, it's today's one is a little bit more, well, it's quite exciting really, because we're going to be looking at the apocalyptic books. So the books that actually refer or have the visions of what's going to come, much of it to do with the end of the world or the apocalypse. And there's just so much in it that it's really hard to know what we should look at and what we shouldn't. Anyway, hopefully we've got a good coverage this morning. I'll ask the worship band to come up as usual and we'll sing a few songs together.
All right, thanks, Ben. If everyone would like to stand up, our first song for today, if we can get it up. Nope. Okay. Oh, no. In suspense. Oh, there we go. Mighty to Save.
Can't
Well done, everyone. It was a, you know, good warm-up. Our second song for today is See Him Coming. Our last song for today is King of Kings.
To
kingdom coming, and to reconcile the lost, to redeem the whole creation. You did not despise the cross, for even in your suffering, you saw to the other side, knowing this was our stone was moved for good, for the Lamb had conquered death, and the dead rose from their tombs, and the angels stood in awe, for the souls of all who come to the Father of your store, and the church of Christ was born, then the Spirit lit the flame, now this gospel, the truth of all, everyone. You can all take a seat.
Nice job, everyone. Very nice to get together and sing some songs of praise to our great God. And I did slip a song in there that the band hadn't practiced, the See Him Coming, though we have played it before once or twice, so I figured it was probably okay. And it's very, very relevant to this morning's service. Now, of course, the June to August or winter series for the online combined CIC services is this Understanding the Bible series, Old Testament, the New Testament, and key messages. So in June, we looked at the Old Testament and divided that all up amongst the among the weeks there. In the New Testament, we've looked at, well, let's have a look and see what we've looked at, in fact. That one there. The New Testament, we looked at the Gospels, we've looked at the history, as the Acts of the Apostles, we've looked at Paul's letters and letters from other the church leaders at the time and disciples. And this week, of course, we're looking at the apocalyptic or prophetic visions. Now, I mentioned before that it is a series that we run all the way through winter, and I think it's quite a good way to sort of get in and give a bit of an overview to each of these topics. Look, realistically, there's no way in the world we're going to be able to pull apart every apocalyptic vision and things like that. If we did that, then we'd be here until the apocalypse, I think. And so, you know, that's not sort of my aim today to do that. Today we're looking at a bit of an overview of the way the Bible is put together and the way that throughout hundreds and hundreds of years this story has been told and retold. These visions have been seen again and again. Now, I'll start this morning proper though with the Lord's Prayer, if you'd all like to bow your heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. So, the prophetic books, it's, the apocalyptic books, really. They are books of prophecy, but the reason why we call them the apocalyptic group, I guess you could say, is because they're the ones that will contain the story of what is going to happen at the end of the world. Is everything all right? Oh, right, okay, got to do this. That one? Is that better? All the online people can see me now. Probably a good shot of the piano. It'd be no surprise to many of you that there is that these, well, many of us that have read through a lot of the books of the Bible, that these visions of the times to come are spread right throughout the books of the Bible. Little snippets here and there, even the imagery that is used usher in, say, a new time or that sort of thing, is carried forward into these apocalyptic visions. And so we get this whole sort of, education into the way that God will establish things, the way that things will be done. And so I think it's important for us to, even if we don't particularly understand everything that is being, being said in these visions, look, perhaps they'll become more clear as we get closer. Certainly the people who received these visions didn't even understand them, as we'll see today when we look at Daniel chapter 7. Now, I've mentioned this one before. This is a little mnemonic, which I think is rather important for each of us as Christians to understand. We believe that the Bible is the Word of God, that the Scriptures are inspired, and there's, for those of us that have read them, we can see right throughout it there is evidence to say that this is the case, that these things actually are not just some random stories that have been put together. And there's five reasons. You can remember them on your hand. And that's the reason why I've got a hand up here to teach that. If we start with the pinky. The pinky, which starts with P, we can remind us of the prophecy that is in prophecies that are contained within the Bible. Now, I'm not just talking about apocalyptic type prophecies. I'm talking about prophecies, say, that are recorded in Daniel chapter 8, for example, were hundreds of years before they actually happened, so much so that it's said that when Alexander the Great turned up at Jerusalem, they just opened the gates and said, "Here, we've been expecting you. We were expecting the Greeks to actually come and take over from the Medes and the Persians." You know, these things were prophesied, and when they were understood by the people, then they were able to, well, at least know that God was in control of that situation, if not, understand what was happening as well. The ring finger reminds us of unity, the unity of the Bible. Despite the fact that it was written by many different authors, people from out minding the sheep to kings in palaces to people in the dungeons, you know, these books of the Bible that have been assembled have a unity about them, and we'll see that in a moment. And this is perhaps one of the things that we can look at, or one of the important things that we can get out of today's look at the apocalyptic books or visions, is that there is such a tremendous unity in the Bible. And one book will say one thing, another book will tell it in a slightly different way. In fact, one of the interesting things is when you consider the Gospels, there is a unity amongst those, written by four different authors in different locations. These were all people that saw the amazing works of Jesus Christ, and yet they all have a slightly different take on what actually happened as far as, you know, the different perspective. The facts remain the same, but it's told from four different perspectives, and that's kind of makes it's another reason why it's authentic, and these guys just aren't copying each other's, trying to copy each other's works, I guess you could say. Another one that's going to come out today, I think, probably is remembered by the middle finger, the big finger. It reminds us that the Bible answers the big questions, life's big questions. Why are we here? Where did we come from? What's going to happen? Who's in control? Why are things so corrupt and broken down in this world? The Bible has the answer for those things. On a practical sense, it's an index to history as well. That's the index finger. We can remember that. It's an index to history in that you can go to these parts of the world and where the Bible has said there was a city here, you can get your excavator out and you can dig one up and you can find it. It is accurate in that sense as well. It's withstood the test of time. Every time that it's people have said, oh, the Bible can't be right because there's supposed to be something here or this was supposed to have happened here and we can't find any evidence, well, lo and behold, they've gone on and they've found that evidence. And lastly, but not leastly, the Bible changes lives. We can read the Bible, we can follow its instructions, and we know that it changes lives. That's the thumb, and that's the thumbs up, right? So that's the other way to remember that. So anyway, if you get nothing out of today's messages, then there's one for you. Now, to support that unity that I was talking about, this is very small font because there's lots of information on there. We've got this little infographic of all of the different apocalyptic vision type themes that are spread across the Bible and how they actually interconnect. You'll notice that there's a substantial portion that head over there into Revelation. And you'd expect that so because it's a book completely about the end times. But you see, it goes back, there's heavily, we get some really... thick lines on different themes that go back to books like, Isaiah and Ezekiel and Daniel. But even still, you know, we see that there's also, actually, where's the line? There should be one from Matthew to Revelation as well. I'll have to fix that later. But anyway, there are so many different themes, apocalyptic themes, and we can see that the way that the Bible mentions these things again and again. The unity, which is, of course, the ring finger because of union, you know, marriage, that sort of thing. Okay. Anyway, you get it. So I think that's one of the things we can get out of it. Now, there's many different themes that we can follow in these apocalyptic books or these things. Things like the day of the Lord, you know, that Jesus coming in, the Messiah or the Son of Man coming in the clouds. We sang about that, see him coming in the clouds of heaven. Things like the dragon, for example, the judgment, the books being opened, the new heavens and the new earth. These are all themes that are apocalyptic type themes that we see in each of the books that contain them. And they're mentioned again and again. One which I'd really like to look at is the Gog and Magog. I didn't actually realize just how specific that particular theme is. We hear about it in Revelation, but there's actually an earlier book as well that goes through and describes how it is that they end up after a wonderful period in the millennium of peace and prosperity, that they are again inspired, or I guess you could say, or corrupted by Satan's influence to go after the holy city at that particular time. Anyway, interesting. We won't look at that today, but that'll be a good study. Okay, so there's a few standouts, of course. We remember the beasts. Daniel 7, we hear about four beasts, and they're all different in their different imagery that's being used there. But there's many things about this particular beast these beasts that are mentioned in Daniel and the beast that is mentioned in Revelation. They have things like they have the 10 horns, 10 crowns, all of those sorts of things. The fact that we have, multiple faces here, that things that are like a leopard, things that have the face of a lion or the face of a calf, or, this imagery is used because they're trying to explain, these prophets are actually trying to explain something which they really don't understand themselves, and it's something that they've seen. Now, we had a couple of seminars recently, one which was who gets closer to God, and the previous one was who can see God. And I thought it was very relevant because we looked at the divide between the physical and the spiritual realms. It's almost like a completely different dimension. When you consider the physical realm, we get our in our space travel and things, we looked at this in the seminar, it doesn't matter if we get on the fastest, most well-built, you know, Star Trek, I don't know, type of ship or whatever, and we get in that thing and we travel for light years, we still won't get any closer to God. God exists in a completely different dimension, doesn't he? He exists in a completely different realm. He exists in this spiritual realm. And the reason why that's relevant to these visions and things is because these men that have had these visions have been given a view of, I guess, from the heavenly perspective. So they use these things like the power of the lion or, you know, things like these images to describe what's going on from the spiritual realm's perspective on earth. So there's not going to be some enormous beast that comes out of the sea and it's got all of these horrible heads and things like that and like a horror film type of thing. That's not what this is all about. This is not, we've seen this in Daniel 8 when he goes on to describe the kingdoms of Babylon, you know, the Persian and the Greek empires, and they were in the symbol of rams and he-goats and all of those sorts of things. And the reason why that imagery is actually used is to actually describe something that is going to happen from a heavenly perspective. They've been given the insight from that heavenly dimension. This is kind of what it looks like to them. It's described in that way. I don't know. I hope that's kind of clear. Another standout, Ezekiel 1 and 10. If anybody's read Ezekiel, you'll notice that there's some pretty unreal imagery in there. The living creatures in Ezekiel 1 and 10, of course, are cherubims. And so you're trying to describe, again, something that is in the spiritual dimension, in this, you know, this sort of heavenly realm with earthly imagery. And you end up with some pretty wacky stuff. I'll let you go and read that in your own time. Now, they're actually, the Ezekiel, the creatures in there are described as cherubims, which, as we understand in this church, are the spirits of men and women, which is interesting. The four living creatures that are referred to in Isaiah and in Revelation are slightly different. They have six wings instead of four. That's another thing. That's one thing. But once again, you've got this imagery of, say, the head of an eagle, the head of a calf, the head of a lion, the head of a man, that sort of thing. These things probably don't have the head of a calf and the head of an eagle and the head of a man, right? That's not really what we're saying here. We're talking about attributes that have been assigned to these things. Perhaps they're as strong as a lion, perhaps or as a calf or something. Maybe they've got the sight of an eagle. Perhaps they've got the understanding of a man, you know, that sort of thing. These attributes are used in this vision sense to describe these creatures. And we actually understand that these creatures are seraphims, which is another type of angelic creature. other notable ones, which we're not going to look at today, say the two olive trees and the seven golden candlesticks. They're mentioned in Zechariah, Isaiah, and Revelation. And you can see here that if we look at the dates that these things were given, there's hundreds and hundreds of years between these visions that were given. And they're all slightly different. These guys saw perhaps a very similar sort of thing, and they all try to describe it in a slightly different way. But the key thing is here, and I guess the thing that really makes us understand that these are authentic things, is if you were going to copy somebody else's work, you'd just go and copy the work, right? They would see exactly, they'd write exactly the same thing. I saw exactly this, I saw that. You know, it's the fact that they are slightly different and yet still have these similar attributes is a mark of authenticity, I guess, as well. Now, the standouts I thought today were in four categories. As rational people, we understand that if something has a beginning, it must have an end as well. I think pretty well everybody who has ever existed would understand that there has been a beginning to all of this, to all of the world, to life, all that sort of thing. We understand that things started somewhere. in the physical realm that we live in, things started somewhere. Now, whether we believe that there was an eternal God or eternal matter, that's a whole different thing. But even evolution says that something came from something. So there must have been something there in the beginning. Which then kind of goes on to say is, well, there must be an end to all of these things. And so in answering the big question, which is the middle finger, right, we find that the Bible provides an answer for the time of the end. And that's recorded again and again and again throughout the scriptures. Isaiah 13 and Matthew 24 are standouts for those. But I think we won't look at those too much today, I don't think really. But the important thing is, as rational people, we understand there is a beginning, and everybody in the world, I think, would understand that if there's a beginning, there must be an end. As human beings, we crave justice. We crave that the wrong will be made right. People have sung about it for thousands of years. In multiple cultures, in multiple religions, there is a thing that is expected that is to happen, and that is that wrong will fail and right prevail, that there will be some sort of a record and people will get what they deserve, right? Everybody has that. As human beings, we have that desire to see that happen. And that, of course, is another big question, is when will that happen? Some people don't really seem to get it in this life, you know. They go on and they're wicked and they continue to be wicked and nothing ever seems to happen to them, right? The Bible answers that. It answers that in this judgment for all that happens by the only being who is really in the, I guess, position to rightly judge, and that, of course, is God. And we know that the books are opened and we know that people will be judged according to what they have done on this earth, which is a bit of a scary thought. As Christians, we understand the importance of Jesus being triumphant, of him actually being the one that overcomes all of these great injustices and wrong and things. He overcomes the injustices by suffering the injustice himself. The greatest injustice that ever occurred in the world was this perfect man, Jesus, who had done no wrong, suffering for the sins of the world on the cross. As Christians, we go looking for that, and once again, we find that in the Bible. We find that Jesus will actually be given the kingdom, and his dominion, the kingdom and the greatness of the kingdom, will be given to him, and it will be an everlasting kingdom, as it says. And that's recorded once again in many different parts of these, many different books of the Bible. Daniel 7, of course, is one that we're going to be looking at today. Revelation, as we saw from our graph before, has a lot of these things in it. As Christian Israelites, and also as people, I think, too, we understand that there is a real loss that happens when we lose our physical body. People get really sad when people die. And the reason is because we're going to miss the person, sure, that sort of thing. But also we understand that this is a terrible thing, that this life or such, or this physical existence of this person has come to a close. It's come to an end. It's been the rental period has expired and the car has to go back to the rental company. That's something that we understand will be undone. We know that it is in God's plan to see the redemption of man physically at the end. And we see that that's going to be to a special group, to Israel. And once again, that's prophesied again and again and again. It's sad, isn't it, Millie? I know. But it won't be in the finish. All right. So with all those things said, let's get into our readings today, because we do have a few, though not all of them, which is good. So I'll read from Daniel chapter 7 and try and picture those beasts that we saw in the graphics before. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. The four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. Okay, I've got to stop. The sea, the great sea, we know this is all tied up with the evil that is present in the world, the sinful nature that is present in the world, and the beasts come out of these things, the kingdoms come out of these things. We've done studies on that before. I can't get into it today. I won't have time. Let's keep going though. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second like to a bear, and it raised it up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting kingdom which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever, ever. You've got to watch it in here. It kind of jumps forward and backwards. So, you know, it jumps forward. It's almost like, I don't want to scare you. So it actually works out okay in the end. And then he goes back and keeps telling a bit more of the tale, which is very interesting. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured, brake in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet, and of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms and shall devour the whole earth and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until the time and times and the dividing of time. We know those as dispensations, but that's another thing. But the judgment shall sit, they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. So don't worry if you didn't understand everything that's being read there. Even Daniel didn't understand it. But what we do know is that these are the world events that are supposed to occur in that apocalyptic time. Now, let's stop now and have a hymn, hymn 121. And, I thought it was rather fitting for today's topic. Thanks, Paul. Hymn 121, God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. He plants his footstep in the sea and rides upon the storm. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scanned his works in vain. I'm sure that that's the reason why things are done in parables and in visions, because honestly, it's pretty hard to understand what these guys are going on about sometime. What Daniel's looking at, what John's looking at, you think, oh boy, you try and picture it, and it's pretty wild. Oh yes, this is a big job, this, organizing the camera. One more reading for us this morning, and this is actually from Matthew. Now, I don't know whether you remember, but Jesus actually does describe to his disciples what the time of the end will be like, what this apocalyptic time will be like. I tried to cut out some of it because it's so long, but there was just so much good stuff in there, so I thought we'd just read it all. So sit back and enjoy. Matthew 24, starting at verse 4. And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear wars and rumours of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. And then shall the end come. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not, since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man come in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. It's an amazing thing that there is so much actually really said about what is going to happen in the time of the end. I thought it was interesting that when we look at, say, at Romans 8, it gives us a bit of an understanding as to our struggle down here. It tells us that the creature was made subject to vanity. What does that mean? It means that evil entered the world. It entered the world through the sin of Adam and Eve. And since then, things have just been rolling along and bad things have been happening. As it says, you know, there's wars and rumors of wars. You only have to turn on the television and look at the news, and it's nothing but bad news there, really. And yet, I think one of the encouraging things about the Bible is that these things have already been planned out. They're all supposed to happen. I'll tell you one thing, and I know I've said it before. COVID was a really interesting time. You know, I work, and in my work, like most people, get to deal with a lot of customers. And there was no time when you could really talk about your faith more freely that I can remember than when everybody was locked up at home in COVID. And you know, they were more than happy to start talking about their faith in God, that God's got it all under control, things like that. And I think it was Scott Morrison got up there and said, if you're a praying person, pray to God to help us through this type of thing. And I thought that was really interesting. You know, people, all of a sudden, this desire to have something that was preordained, that was pre-set up, that was going according to plan, the desire for that to be in place was pretty well on everybody's mind. And I think the thing is that there are a few different types of people out there. There's those that do actually go along and they say, look, I'm here for a short, you know, for a good time, not a long time. You know, I'm just here for me to see what I can do. Jesus had a lot to say about those people. And then I think there's those people as well who sit there and they hang out looking for disasters, looking for signs that something's going to fall, that the world is going to enter into anarchy. You know, a lot of the conspiracy theorists sort of thing fit in that camp as well. But I think really as Christians, as believers, as people who understand that there is a plan and that God has these things already set in place or ordained these things to happen, that we don't have to be concerned about what is going to come, about these great terrible beasts and things which scared the pants off those people that saw them in the visions. They were very upset after they'd seen all of those visions. Daniel was, etc. But it's for us to know that these things are planned out. I do think it's very interesting, and since this is on the screen here, I'll bring it up. Jesus actually says that things will actually get so bad that the days would have to be shortened. Now, the very fact that something can be shortened means that it's already been measured. God has already set a time up for this world to run. That's what this is all about. The fact that there is a time for everything. When we look at the Bible, we actually see that things are divided up into what we call dispensations. There's a time after Adam fell and the people in the old world before the flood. And there was a time before the law came and the nation of Israel was established. There was a time when Jesus came. And then we see since then, and we know pretty well that it's been a couple of thousand years since then. If we follow back the genealogies listed in the Bible, we know that approximately 6,000 years have passed. And we know from the keys given to Peter that this whole thing should run for about that period of time. Jesus tells us that the days will be shortened. Things will get so bad that they'll have to be called to a halt a little bit earlier, because otherwise no flesh would be saved. And what does that actually mean? For the elect's sake, that will have to be shortened. So therefore, the physical redemption of mankind has to be somehow tied up with a specific time. Revelations, of course, tells us about people being redeemed. And there is in Revelation 7, it says, you know, there's an angel that stands up and he says, "Don't hurt the earth or the sea or the land until we have sealed the servants of God." And then, of course, it goes on and it numbers the people that will be saved at that point in time. This is not the common salvation. This is not the salvation that comes only from believing in Jesus Christ. This is an elected salvation for people who will actually show the glory of God and be taken from the fallen, corrupt state that we fell into and made like Jesus Christ. We understand the number that's given there. It lists the tribes. It ends up to be 144,000. And we know from verse 31 here that he will gather them from the four winds, from all over the earth. I think it's interesting as well, if we go back a little bit here, in verse 14, we're also given another key. And the zoom thing's right on top of it, which is rather annoying. There we go, move it out of the road. "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." God has a desire for his children to come back for him. He's given the time. It says that he's patient, that he endures all of these terrible things that go on here on the earth. Not because he enjoys watching it or anything like that. It must affect him more deeply than we understand. But we know that everybody will be given an opportunity to turn to God. And then will the end come. Then we'll see those things begin to take, those apocalyptic events begin to take place. So I think really if there's anything that we can, there's a few things that we can say about the apocalyptic books. I normally like to have a blank slide in there. Oh, there's one. There's a few things that we can say about these apocalyptic books. First of all, that these men were obviously inspired. They obviously had a similar sort of vision. They weren't given a vision of earthly things. They didn't just see, you know, big armies invading each other, things like that. They were given a vision from the heavenly perspective. We call it the immortal eye in our church. From the eye of the one that is in God's realm. They were given that. And that's the reason why it looks a little bit, it's a bit, you know, the imagery is a bit funny. But what we can understand is that because they were given this understanding, they were shown these things. We know also that these things are already going to be, they're already planned out. We don't have to worry about something taking God by surprise. We don't have to worry that by some action of our own, we are somehow going to be changing the course of history and changing and destroying the earth before the time, put it that way. So there's confidence that we can take from that. So what do we do? Until then, as it says, as the angel said to Daniel, it's for a time to come, and in the meantime, just go about your daily business. And as it says in verses like Micah 6, 8, to just live justly and love mercy and walk humbly with your God. Look out for the promises, sure. Look out for the events that are going to happen, but don't make them your focus. Make the focus being what you can do for God, and also if you can see the hope that is there for these elect, these people that are destined for this glory to come, then take steps in that direction as well. So let's have a hymn to finish off this morning. It's hymn 47, which I also thought was rather, rather fitting for today's topic as well. Hymn 47. Blow the trumpet in Zion, set the standard on high, proclaim to the world that Jehovah is nigh, that the slaves who of evil and Satan complain may rally around it, their freedom to gain. Thank you everyone for coming this morning. I think something to keep in mind is from Matthew 24, our reading this morning, for as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. as John says at the end of Revelation, even so, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll look forward to seeing you all again soon.